Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media.
Welcome to Earth Eats, a show of real food and green living. I'm Annie Corrigan.
So looking out at these guys, they literally, they arrived in through the mail in 9 little boxes. And now...
Now they're almost ready for prime time. It's Mandy Napier's 900 turkeys. We take a field trip to Schacht Farm in today's show. Harvest Public Media finds a hole in the organic food pipeline. What about the grain? Later in the show, Judith Dern is back to help you cook the best Thanksgiving dinner of your life. Today, Turkey 101, and 2 recipes with Chef Daniel Orr, both of which would make great vegetarian or vegan side dishes for the holiday. Before we travel to the farm or don the apron in the kitchen, we talk news. Food headlines with Luann Johnson.
We combed the many food-related articles posted on NPR's website for our headlines this week. 4 stories for you. Fertilizer is the lifeblood of any successful farming operation, which is why farmers are worried about a ruling by the FDA. It aims to limit the use of animal manure in growing food. It's all in the name of food safety. Salmonella and E. coli, commonly found in waste products, can live in soil from a couple of weeks up to 300 days. The rules would require farmers who spread manure on food crops that are eaten raw to not harvest that food for 9 months. Current organic rules require farmers to wait 4 months. If you think about the arc of the growing season, 9 months is a very long time. The rules would only apply to farms with more than $500,000 in annual sales or which supply food to supermarkets. The comment period on the new regulations ended this week. Funding to food stamps or the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program was cut on November 1st. Stateline released statistics this week to show just who has been affected across the country. Would you have guessed that Oregon is one of the states most pinched by the reduction? It's true. 1 in 5 Oregonians is on food stamps. Digging into the stats further, Stateline shows that over 300,000 children and 159,000 elderly people and those with disabilities have seen their benefits cut. Find a link to the interactive map on our website. See how your state is faring. As we reported last week, the FDA proposed a ban on artificial trans fats. They've also issued its first draft guidance on how to minimize acrylamide in food products. French fry lovers have heard about this chemical before. Back in 2002, the FDA warned consumers that acrylamide was known to cause cancer in lab animals when ingested at high doses. The chemical appears in food when it's been cooked at high temperatures, like frying potatoes. So basically, it's been in our foods probably for as long as we've been cooking, but we didn't know it until a little over a decade ago. But researchers have yet to show a link between acrylamide consumption and cancer in humans. Regardless, health officials say eating only minimal amounts of fried foods is a good idea generally. And news from a Cleveland area Walmart. Photos of a sign were released on the internet this week. The sign read, "Please donate food items here so associates in need can enjoy Thanksgiving dinner." One side sees the call for donations as more proof that Walmart exploits its employees. The other side sees it as people helping people. You can hear voices from both sides of the debate at npr.org. We post news like this 24/7 on Facebook and Twitter. Connect with us at Earth Eats.
All right, Luann Johnson, great work this week.
Thanks, Annie.
Organic food is a hot market in the U.S. The Organic Trade Association says that sales over the last 5 years have grown 35%. But there's a problem in the supply chain. Not enough organic grain. Clay Masters reports for Harvest Public Media on why more producers in the Farm Belt are not willing to take on organic production despite a hefty price premium.
I'm standing in front of the meat counter at Gateway Market, a specialty grocery store near downtown Des Moines. They sell a lot of organic products here, your meat, dairy, you name it. And many of these products are labeled Organic Valley, one of the nation's biggest organic co-ops. And it faces a bit of a dilemma.
In the last 3 or 4 or 5 years, with the tremendous change in the corn markets. We've seen that the supply has not kept up with the livestock marketplaces.
That's George Seaman, the CEO of Organic Valley. When people talk about organic food, they often think fresh fruits and vegetables. But just as corn and soybeans dominate conventional processed food and meat, these same grains are often key ingredients for organic foods. But Seaman says he needs more grain farmers to grow organically, that is, without pesticides or genetically modified organisms. Organic Valley even offers a 3-year contract that offers free technical support for farmers to get started. Then the co-op buys that grain and uses it to feed the livestock, so the meat can be labeled organic for a higher price than the conventional product.
Organic Valley has been really an important part of our farming operation. You've got to have a differentiated market, otherwise it never works.
That's Tom Franzen, who farms organic corn and soybeans near the northeast Iowa town, New Hampton. They sell some of their grain to Organic Valley, but most of it stays on the farm. The Franzen's farm has not always been organic. Franzen admits the transition was difficult. It takes 3 years of producing without pesticides to become certified organic by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And it's a huge commitment that doesn't happen overnight. Now they feed their 65 cattle and 500 hogs the corn, soybean, and hay they grow on the farm, and then they sell that meat to Organic Valley.
But if our strategy here was a short-term buck, it wouldn't have worked. I doubt if we would still be organic either. So I think the issue in regards to organic production is that we need people that have really thought through what they want out of life and what's important to them and how to make that sustain itself long-term in the future.
But ultimately, that's a part of a larger long-term business decision. Kurt Lawton is the editor for the Corn and Soybean Digest, published out of Minneapolis, and he says there's a lot for a farmer to consider.
You know, farmers run a business just like any business on Main Street. They have to look at what's most profitable given their labor, their equipment, their storage facilities, as well as their landlords.
Lawton says that's a huge consideration for the farmer. But Franzen says organic farming is profitable, and his crop yields from his farm's more than 300 acres are comparable to conventional neighbors. Kathleen Dellett, an organic researcher at Iowa State, can back that up. Here at Iowa State's Neely Kenyon Ranch near Greenfield in southwest Iowa, Dellett has test plots of conventional and organic corn and soybeans side by side.
They're completely randomized. We set it up like that on purpose so that and when anybody comes in, they can't tell which one's organic, which one's conventional, and it's shown to be true that I always have to pull out the map, too.
Dellett uses her research to help farmers make the change from conventional to organic. But the biggest obstacle, she says, is not in the field, it's in the marketing.
It's just very, very convenient the way the conventional system is set up right now for farmers to follow that system. That is, you just take your crops right down the road to an elevator, while for organic crops, you have to have an organic buyer.
That uncertainty of a buyer is enough to keep farmers from wanting to make the change. Latest data from the Iowa Department of Agriculture shows that the state has about 127,000 acres certified organic. That's barely a sliver of the roughly 30 million acres of productive Iowa farmland. For Harvest Public Media, I'm Clay Masters.
Read and listen to more stories from the reporting team at Harvest Public Media at harvestpublicmedia.org. We visited Schacht Farm a few weeks ago to meet their hogs. Today, it's their hundreds and hundreds of turkeys. Mandy Napier has been raising these turkeys for about 4 months, moving them from pasture to pasture, and after next week, they'll all be gone. Even after 8 years of raising turkeys, the birds can still surprise her.
And they're a whole lot of fun, but you have to be very open to a lot of possibilities of things that can go right or things that can go wrong.
They were recently moved to this fresh 2-acre pasture, which is surrounded by an electrical fence and protected by the Great Pyrenees Savannah. Napier takes us on a walk from the farmhouse, past the turkeys' former nursery and the several pastures they decimated earlier in the year, and up a hill to visit them in their final home.
So we take them out of the brooder at 8 weeks. They literally have started down here in this pasture and literally have worked by the time we will have processed them. They'll cover about 12 acres. For example, on Monday, we fenced in a 2-acre paddock, and that'll last them, when they get this big, about a week, week and a half, and that's it.
So how big are these turkeys going to be when you process them for folks for Thanksgiving?
Well, they're still walking around, so I'm not exactly sure, but somewhere around 16 to 22 pounds. There are a lot of variables very much outside of my control that determine the size of a turkey, mainly weather. The amount of rain that we get determines how well the forage, you know, the grasses and legumes grow. How mild the temperature is determines how much of their food needs to go toward just simply keeping them warm as opposed to growing.
We're approaching the big, oh my gosh, there are millions of them.
Yes.
Can you give me a head count?
About 900. Hello, hello, hello!
That was so awesome. Thank you for doing that.
So looking out at these guys, they arrived in through the mail in 9 little boxes. And now...
Oh, and they're running toward us. Do they think we're going to feed them?
No, they're very curious by nature. They want to know what's going on. They want to know who you are. They're you know, flock creatures too, so...
So I'm seeing white and black birds. Is there a difference here between the white and the black turkeys?
Yes, the black ones are actually called bronze is their technical name. They are a strain of like the old standard heritage bronze turkey, the standard bronze turkey. And the white birds are just the conventional broad-breasted. I raise both because the bronze are better foragers, but they mimic each other's behavior. So the bronze actually teach the white how to forage, and they get along just fine. So
I have to tell you, I'm not afraid of birds, but seeing them all,
it's
like
a little intimidating.
It's a lot intimidating.
Yes.
It's Mandy Napier of Shacked Farm. Photos of the loquacious birds at eartheats.org. How do you normally see sweet potatoes at Thanksgiving? Probably paired with marshmallows, right? Not this year. Chef Daniel Orr has this recipe for sweet potatoes that will satisfy your sweet tooth without giving you a cavity.
All right. Well, this is a recipe coming from the islands. I worked on Anguilla for 2 years, and I had a lovely cook down there. Her name was Athena, and she was Jamaican. And this is her West Indian slam and yam salad. You know, this is another version a lot of people think of. When they think of sweet potatoes, they just think of mashed sweet potatoes or real sweet ones with marshmallows on top. But sweet potatoes are used all throughout the Caribbean as what they call a provision. And provisions are all the root vegetables that stretch out the meal. So you can just have your 3 to 4 ounces of protein and then have larger portions of the provisions and the good leafy vegetables and that kind of thing. We're going to start, instead of using oil in this, we're going to use coconut milk. Okay, our acid today is going to be lime juice. Okay, we're going to add some red onion, 1 red onion sliced. All right, and then we have about 2 large sweet potatoes. They're cooked and diced.
Skins are off.
They are peeled. If you do want to get that fiber, you can throw in the skins too. It's not going to hurt anything. I just like the presentation of this a little better. We've got about 1/2 cup of chopped mint, one of my favorite herbs. Again, roughly chopped. I don't ever chop my herbs real, real fine because I think they get lost in a dish. Okay, some Italian parsley, again, roughly chopped. Scallions. We want to add a touch of sweetness, so we're going to add honey. We're going to stir this all around, and I'm going to finish this with just a little bit of sherry vinegar. This is a Spanish sherry vinegar. It's called Xerez, X-E-R-E-S, and it's got a really nice kind of... smoky flavor from the sherry casks that the vinegar is aged in. Okay, I'm going to add a couple teaspoons of curry powder, getting to that West Indian flavor. And then finally, we're going to season it with salt and pepper. Okay, let me give it a little taste. The coconut milk and the honey really play off the natural sweetness of the sweet potatoes. So let me put this on a plate, and then I'm going to sprinkle it with some coconut so it gives a little bit of crunchiness to it. You can just put it on some lettuce, a little bit of cilantro, garnish it with some limes. We want to spoon over a little bit of that nice dressing from the bottom of the bowl. And you got a perfect starter, and heck, I think that'd probably cost you $1, $1.50 to make it home.
And boy, is this one good. You won't miss the marshmallows at all. Add this recipe to your Thanksgiving menu. Search for the West Indian Yam Salad at eartheats.org. Coming up, Thanksgiving horror stories.
The one story I can think of is the year my mother put the stuffing in the bird and my father forgot to serve it.
Oops.
It was a family joke for many years.
Well, just one horror story. Judith Dern gives us tips for making stuffing and turkey just ahead. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods. Fresh, local, organic food with delis at all four locations and a garden center at East 3rd Street. BloomingFoods.coop. Touchstone Wellness, therapeutic massage, and Hatha Yoga, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels. Memberships and gift certificates available. More at TouchstoneWellness.com. And Designscape Horticultural Services, designing sustainable growth for a changing environment for over 25 years, building living soil for edibles and ornamentals with enhanced compost tea, and boosting plant health by enriching soil biology. 812-988-8900 or designhort.com. Welcome back to Earth Eats. I'm Annie Corrigan. Judith Dern spends a lot of her time these days addressing your Thanksgiving cooking questions.
Frozen turkey, what to do, dry turkey, dry stuffing, lumpy gravy, thin gravy, the undercooked pie.
She's the senior communications manager at allrecipes.com. Last week, we talked about gravy and side dishes with her. This week, we're getting her tips for cooking the money portion of the meal, of course, the turkey. Then let's go from the side dishes now to the main course, the thing that everybody on Twitter, by far, they're most worried about, this turkey that they're cooking. They're worried about undercooking it, cooking it starting at the right time of the day. Give me five tips for cooking the perfect turkey this year.
Okay. The first thing I would recommend is to buy a standard meat thermometer. This is going to be your best friend to let you know when the turkey is actually cooked properly. You're going to stick the thermometer into the thickest part of the thigh near the breast, avoiding the bone. And when the temperature reads 165 degrees Fahrenheit, then you'll know the turkey is done. You pull it out of the oven. You're going to let it rest for 20 minutes. You cover it with a tent of foil. And that resting period allows the juices to seep back into the whole bird and keep it moist. But I want to start at the beginning because you want to make sure your turkey is thawed. Most people do buy frozen turkeys. So you want to allow enough time for it to be completely thawed. Figure 24 hours for every 5 pounds. So if you have a 15-pound turkey and it's frozen, you want to allow at least 3 days for it to thaw. The other thing I want to stress is that you do want to thaw the bird in your fridge. If you get stuck, you can thaw it faster by putting into a cold water bath and changing the water every 30 minutes until it's thawed. but that's like the last resort. The second or third tip would be to take the turkey out of the fridge about an hour before you're ready to roast it and just let it come to room temperature. You want to be sure to take out the bag of giblets. A lot of turkeys will come with a bag of giblets in the center cavity, and you want to make sure to pull those out. You do want to use a roasting rack and a large roasting pan. And the rack is important for two things. It lets the juices drip into the bottom of the pan, and those are lovely. You're going to want those for gravy. And then by having the bird on the roasting rack, it's also a whole lot easier to move around once it's cooked.
And then when are we popping this in the oven? Let's say we want to eat it 4 o'clock. When do you start roasting it?
You have to know the weight of your bird. And for every pound, you figure 20 minutes. So if you have a 15-pound bird, you got to figure 5 hours of roasting time. So you want to work backwards from the time that you plan to serve the bird. Say you want to have dinner at 5 o'clock and get everything ready, you're probably going to want to put it in around 11:30, and that's accommodating the 20 minutes of resting time before you carve it. Does that all make sense? Did I explain that clearly enough?
You absolutely did. I mean, it sounds easy enough. You know, in practice, it's a little different. Have you heard horror stories from people?
The one story I can think of is the year my mother put the stuffing in the bird and my father forgot to serve it.
Oops.
It was a family joke for many years. There is always the stuffing in or stuffing out controversy.
Yeah.
I would recommend cooking it outside the bird, and the reason is that it allows the turkey to cook more evenly in the oven.
Aha, okay. And then people were very concerned that they were going to have enough food. They're all very concerned that there's not going to be enough on the table for their family to eat.
Yes, that's actually an easy one. For a turkey, figure about a pound and a quarter per person. If you want some decent leftovers, then I'd go with a pound and a half per person. So figuring that way, a 15-pound turkey will feed about 12 persons. Mashed potato size, yeah. The standard serving size is about 2/3 cup per person, but I think that's a little stingy myself, so I usually figure 1 cup. And generally, to work backwards from the potatoes, you figure 1 pound of potato yields about 2 cups of mashed potatoes. So for 12 persons, you'd want to buy 6 pounds of potatoes.
All right, so we got our gravy advice, pie crust, stuffing, turkey, and then we've assuaged some concerns about when to start cooking, how much to cook, how much it's going to cost. I feel like we have the whole meal covered. Do you think so?
I think we're good.
Great. Thank you, guys. This has been great.
You got it. Bye.
Judith Dern of allrecipes.com. Didn't catch all that? That's what the website's for. Get timings and temperatures and proportions and recipes, lots of recipes, at eartheats.org. And the All Recipes site is offering a series of videos called Thanksgiving Hero. Watch those at allrecipes.com.
Mike, can you get me a butternut squash?
Yeah, the turkey's great. But the side dishes can be some of the most interesting parts of any Thanksgiving meal. This is a succotash, a bean and corn stew. But Chef Orr is making it especially autumn in flavor with some squash.
Back in the heart of the kitchen, where it's very warm.
Yeah, we call this the piano. That's the stove. And our piano's a little bit messy right now. We had lots of eggs going this morning. We've got 1/2 cup of unsalted butter. And what we're doing is kind of making the, with some onions and garlic, we're making the foundation of the succotash. All right, so we got that butter melting. And again, it looks, 1/2 cup of butter seems like a lot of butter, but this is going to feed 6 to 8 people. And it's meant to be kind of one of those rich, hearty, end of season vegetable dishes.
In comes a butternut squash.
Usually when you're cooking butternut squash, you're cooking it a long time, and it's all smashy and mushy, and usually you're putting a lot of maple syrup and stuff on it. This way we're going to use it, leave it more crunchy, almost like have the texture of a kernel of corn. So we're going to cut it into a kind of a small dice, and this is a fairly quick recipe because all these vegetables are small, so it won't take a long time to cook. All right, our onion is and garlic are starting to melt. You want them to become translucent. Onions are always a sweetening agent kind of in a dish. They have a lot of sugar in them. And so what you're doing is you're evaporating the water out of the onion, and then you're intensifying that sugar. So when you cook things we're going to cook it translucent. That means you're going to kind of be able to see through them a little bit, but we aren't going to caramelize them, which would mean that we were going to color the onions. So we want to keep this fairly blonde or light in color. So now that these are nice and translucent, we're going to start adding our other vegetables. We've got that butternut squash. We've got some corn. Nice baby lima beans, which I love. Some diced red pepper for color. So these are right out of our homestead gardens down in Gibson County in Indiana. You know, I love these things right out of the garden because they have so much more kind of personality. You can see this one looks like some kind of a wrinkly old lion or something.
Yeah, and it's two-tone.
So, you know, that's the fun about using local produce is I think it's got more flavor, it's better for you, and then also just more fun to look at. Okay, we're going to dice up that pepper, again, about the same size as a kernel of corn or a baby lima bean. Okay, another ingredient that we're adding to this autumn succotash are some local mushrooms. We're using some pink oyster mushrooms. All right, so we're going to stir these in, and you can see you've got these nice different shapes and colors.
What a gorgeous colored pot we've got here.
And as that starts to cook down, we're going to splash in some heavy cream, which is not traditional in a succotash, but at farm we like to ramp things up, make them a little more rich and satisfying.
Cannot wait.
We are going to add some herbs. Now, herbs, I think in autumn, I think of sage. So we've got some beautiful fresh sage here. A little bit of tarragon. And tarragon's good to eat raw. Do you know what tarragon tastes like?
I haven't, no.
Okay, well, here's tarragon. This, I forget if you're a licorice lover or not.
Not really, but that's fine. Oh, I do like that.
Yeah, so it has kind of that fennel licorice flavor.
And this is all fresh. These are not dried herbs.
Right. Fresh herbs are always the way to go if you can. Okay, so you can see this is, we don't want to overcook this.
Tasting as we go.
Tasting as we go. It's getting there. I'm going to add a little more salt.
Okay.
I think we got it. Let's get out of this heat and go in the dining room and taste it.
Yes, sir.
The succotash and the yam salad are both vegetarian dishes, and they could be made vegan, no problem. Use the recipes as a starting off point and then make them your own. Find them and lots of other Thanksgiving-ish posts at eartheats.org. Thanks to everyone who helps make Earth Eats possible, including Ben Alford, Aabon Binder, Chad Bouchard, Judith Dern, Luann Johnson, Liz Leslie, Mandy Napier, Chef Daniel Orr, and the teams at All Recipes and Harvest Public Media. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods, fresh, local, organic food with delis at all four locations and a garden center at East 3rd Street, bloomingfoods.coop. Touchstone Wellness, Therapeutic Massage, and Hatha Yoga, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels. Memberships and gift certificates available. More at touchstonewellness.com. And Designscape Horticultural Services, designing sustainable growth for a changing environment for over 25 years. Building living soil for edibles and ornamentals with enhanced compost tea and boosting plant health by enriching soil biology. 812-988-8900 or designhort.com. Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media. Will Murphy, executive producer. We'll touch base again after Thanksgiving. Hope you have a great holiday. I'm Annie Corrigan.